Well, hello, everyone. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Night Roundup, coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C., this 6th of December on a very, very cold and snowy night here in Washington, D.C. It's the first snowfall of the season. Not much, but pretty miserable weather here overall. And anyone who's ever been to the nation's capital, you'll know that with one snowflake in the air, people go into a real panic situation. They're not quite yet abandoning their vehicles on the Washington Beltway, but the thought is in their mind. This is when the grocery stores here become basically the shelves are bare of all milk, bread, and for some godforsaken reason, toilet paper. I just don't know what possesses people when they see a few snowflakes in the air to grab up all the milk, the bread, and the toilet paper. They must think that they're going to be confined to their homes for like a month or something, the way they go crazy in this city. But it's not the craziest thing we've seen in Washington by any stretch. But we've got a lot to talk about this evening. The first thing we'll talk about is what's going on to the north of the United States. Americans seem very ignorant about what goes on in Canada. And what we're seeing going on up there right now is a real neocon operation. Remember, the neocons are the neo-Nazis. They do not believe in democracy. They do not believe in majority rule. We've seen that time and time again, how they fixed the vote. You know, Al Gore won with 800,000 votes, and they stole the election. It didn't matter whether 800,000 more people wanted Gore to be the president. We're seeing something like this playing out in Canada right now. We'll talk about that, how a minority government has decided, well, they're just going to run things, even though they're in the minority. And what they actually did to ensure they remain in power is a very neocon operation. Undemocratic, but that's what neocons do. They are undemocratic. They are fascists. They are Nazis, whatever you want to call them. That's what these threats to democracy are. We've had them riddled in this past administration, and we've seen them in other countries around the world as well. But we'll talk about what's going on to the north of the U.S. border, and we'll talk about this economic depression we're in. Forget the word recession. We are in a depression. And we'll go back and listen to what President Franklin Roosevelt said and what he did. And we just hope that Barack Obama will borrow a page, not from people like Mr. Nixon and Mr. Reagan and Mr. Bush and even Mr. Clinton when they were faced with economic downturns, that he'll take a page from the FDR book and take some firm action. We'll listen to what FDR said to the American people in one of his radio addresses when this country was faced with a terrible, terrible situation back in the Depression. And he, of course, inherited a very bad situation from Herbert Hoover. But I'll tell you, George W. Bush is probably going to make historians give another look to Herbert Hoover. A lot of people thought Herbert Hoover was one of the worst presidents, but of course everything is relative, and when compared to George W. Bush, even those who were considered the worst presidents start to look pretty darn good. Anyway, we will be back after this short break. This is Wayne Mattson. Hey, welcome back. This is Wayne Mattson coming to you tonight live from a very snowy Washington, D.C. This is the Wayne Mattson Report, this Saturday Night Roundup. If you'd like to call into the program, well, we'd like to take your calls. The toll-free number is 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. As I was mentioning before the break, it's very interesting to hear about what's going on in Canada. We Americans normally don't pay much attention to what's happening north of the border, but in this case, we really ought to, because what we're seeing playing out in Canada is a conservative neocon government headed up by a prime minister named Stephen Harper, who has been a minority. This has been a minority government. Understand that the conservatives have been in a minority status in the parliament after two elections. They had one election that threw out the Liberal Party, and they just recently had an election which they gained more seats, but they still turned up short of a majority. Now, the opposition parties decided to, there's three major ones in the Canadian Parliament, decided to band together to vote this neocon government out of power. Except what did Stephen Harper, the Prime Minister, do? He went to the Governor General, who was a representative of a foreign head of state, the Queen of England. There's many people in the British Isles who don't even view the Queen as a legitimate ruler there. She's a Saxon queen sitting on an Anglo-Celtic throne. Especially, we can talk about what the Scots and the Welsh think of her, and I don't even want to get into what the Irish think. But the Queen, through this Commonwealth, this arcane organization, has a Governor General who basically agreed with Harper to suspend the Canadian Parliament. It is suspended, which means that Harper is now ruling as Prime Minister of Canada without a legislative branch. Very neocon, very fascist. Think about Bush and the unitary executive. I don't care what Congress thinks. I'm going to put signing statements on every bill that Congress passes. See, you got to understand, this is where the neocons are coming from. These are fascists. Forget anything else about them. People say, well, you know, a lot of neoconservatives, if you look at people like Paul Wolfowitz and Richard Perle and others, they're Jewish. It doesn't matter what religion they are. There's Catholic neocons. Look at William Bennett, this bloviating guy on the TV. Look at Bill O'Reilly. All these people are cut from the same bowl of cloth. Look at the evangelical Christians. So these are fascists. It doesn't matter what they are or what country they come from. They're in Canada. They're in America. They're all over the world. Believe me, they're in France. They're in Germany. And that's why they're a danger, because they are global in nature. If we can play this short clip of how this is being reported in Canada, because there's some people up there who are thinking along the same lines that this is a gross usurpation of power in concert with a governor general, a representative of the Queen of England. If we can play this clip on how this is being reported in Canada right now.
Well, the war of words will continue in Ottawa between the government and the opposition, and certainly among ordinary Canadians. We're also looking at the position of the Governor General with new eyes today.
No matter what she had decided, it was going to be a precedent-setting case, and that now has many Canadians wondering if this election process for the GG is outdated and needs to be changed to fit the times. Perhaps it should be an elected position.
Joining us in studio is Bob Finch of the Monarchist League of Canada. Well, in our Toronto Bureau, Tom Frieda, the National Director of Citizens for a Canadian Republic. Tom, in your opinion, has this constitutional crisis shown a need to change the way a Governor General is selected in Canada?
Oh, it most certainly has. We've seen very clearly how the monarchy has contributed to Canada's instability.
In what way?
Well, I have in front of me here the details of a parliamentary committee's recommendations from 2004, right after Adrian Clarkson's budgetary expenses came to light. The recommendations of this committee was that the Parliament of Canada, one, take the necessary measures to conduct a review and initiate a debate on the mandate, constitutional role, responsibilities, and future evolution of the Office of the Governor General. Including the selection process. Now, if we'd taken those recommendations in 2004 and A, democratized the office of the Governor General and firmed up the responsibilities and the role of the Governor General in the Constitution, would we have all of the uncertainty that we have right now? Because up until a couple of hours ago, nobody really knew how the Governor General was going to respond.
Well, there you have it. What he's saying is, now obviously he wants a Republican Canada. The Governor General is not elected. The Governor General is appointed by the Queen, a foreign head of state, on the recommendation of the sitting Prime Minister. And so in this case, this Governor General in Canada, her name is Michelle Jean. Actually born in Haiti, she's a Haitian emigre, a Canadian citizen now, decided to go along with Harper and basically suspend, or what they call prorogue, the Canadian Parliament. Absolutely insane. We've seen a precedent for this in Australia. 1975, a Labour government headed up by Prime Minister Gough Whitlam really started to ask questions about some U.S. spy bases in his country, started to get friendly with China and the then Soviet Union. He incurred the wrath of first the Nixon administration, because he called the Vietnam War just insanity. He pulled Australia's troops out of that quagmire, and he basically wound up on the target list for the CIA. So what happened was, the CIA, they had a great thing going. The Governor General of Australia, a guy named Sir John Kerr, had been the liaison officer for Australian intelligence in Washington, D.C., with the forerunner of the CIA, the OSS, during World War II. They contacted him, and he was more than happy. What he did in response to the CIA's request is basically he conspired with the opposition, got them to vote no on funding the Australian government, the Labour government. The Labour government fell, and Kerr, representative of foreign head of state, appointed the leader of the opposition, the pro-U.S. guy who had been in consultation with the U.S. ambassador, who was a CIA agent himself in Canberra, to overthrow the duly elected government of Australia. So this has happened before, and I think it's time that we get rid, or not we, I can't speak for Canada, but we did get rid of our link to the British Crown back in 1776, and I think these countries like Canada, Australia, and New Zealand might want to follow suit and dump this arcane, this queen and her successors have too much undue influence. As a matter of fact, King Farouk of Egypt once said, after he was ousted as king, that he foresaw the day when the only kings and queens in the world would be the ones you've would find in any deck of playing cards. And he added the King of England, but I think in retrospect, let's keep him in the deck of playing cards and get rid of these kings and queens. They are really anachronisms when they start to interfere with the democratic process. We have Leo on the line from Massachusetts. Leo, are you with us?
Yes. Hi, Wade. You know, we're a little think tank, and I think we're remiss in not getting tactics together. I think the real thing that should have happened back when the bailout was being pushed through, that everybody who disagreed with it, those 271 who said no, should have just walked out and, you know, had a big media thing.
See, yes.
The Parliament, if the majority of Parliament walks out and takes over another building and say, okay, you suspend Parliament, we have our own Parliament, let the people decide who they want to follow. The Queen will be a laughing stock, and you know, the game will be over. But nobody's willing to do that. Nobody's got the guts.
Right. That's,
I mean,
true.
It's as simple as that.
I know. And what we have, you know, the situation in Canada, you know, they're trying to say that this is a normal thing. No, it's unprecedented. There have been suspensions of parliament before, but not to prevent the majority from taking over the reins of government. So this was a real coup d'etat, you could call it.
In a way, yes. But you know, I'm really kind of glad it happened. Think about it. They've been ruling from the background so long that people forget that they're actually playing the game. Now their hand, they showed their hand, you know, like,
right,
we know what their hand has. And I think it's a good thing for everyone to see what they're up against. I mean, at least in Canada, they'll see it. They'll never hear about the news here unless you listen on the internet.
Right, right. Well, what I think one thing I want to note, I've always said, you know, with bailouts of Wall Street and bailouts of Detroit and whatnot. When are the American people going to say, like Howard Beale did in the great movie Network, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore? Tonight, there's a report out of Chicago that a group of workers who were laid off from a factory have now occupied the factory. And,
right.
They're refusing to budge. And there's also talk about a workers' march on Washington early on in the Obama administration. let's hope that the American people are waking up. And listen, it's one thing to have anti-war marches here and the cops would rough up some of these people. But if they start roughing up workers, that's going to resonate around the country because that's your next door neighbor, if not yourself, that's being roughed up. And maybe that could spell the end, at least the beginning of the end of this Homeland Security. Yes.
Keep the lid on.
We have it. Listen, stay with us, Leo. We have a short break. We'll come back to your call right after this break.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Night Roundup, coming to you from a very snowy and blustery Washington, D.C. this evening. Our toll-free number, if you'd like to call into the program, is 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. We were talking to Leo from Massachusetts before we had to take a break. Leo, are you still with us?
Yeah, I was musing during the break.
Yes.
I went through the revolution of the 60s. And I was just thinking, gee, too bad they didn't have the internet way back then.
Oh, I know. You know, I mean, the internet, I have to tell you, though, if you've just, the internet is the only thing we've got going. This program is being brought to you courtesy of the internet. My website, WayneMattsonReport.com, would not exist if it wasn't for the internet. Now we've got Berlusconi, Silvio Berlusconi, the Prime Minister of Italy, and I have to make mention of the fact that he governs with the support of the neo-fascist party in Italy, the successor party to Benito Mussolini's party. I mean, when I'm talking about neocons and fascists, I don't have to draw the line, I don't have to connect the dots. They're already been connected. But Berlusconi says as the president of the G8, he's going to be pushing for internet regulation on a global scale. So there you have it. And he's, of course, a media baron himself, like Rupert Murdoch. And see, that's why they don't like the internet, because we are the alternative. We are the alternative right now, and they just hate that kind of thing. But
well, how do we work
ahead.
Together to stop Web 2.0? Because I hear that's the one that's going to kill everything.
Well, they've been talking about two internets for a long time. One that would be where you'd have to pay, and another one that which would have all the junk, the spam and the junk and all the weird ads and whatnot. But hopefully, there's very smart people out there that understand computers and networking, and hopefully they're working on something that can bypass any attempt by people of the ilk of Berlusconi. And I think Harper in Canada also maneuvered to try to restrict the internet. So you can see the neocons are circling the wagons on the internet. It's something they don't like, because we are in a position to call them on what they're trying to do. As long as they control the media, they control, opinion. But the minute they lose control, that's when they're in trouble. And let's face it, they know it. And one thing about the neocons, they're not going to give up power without a fight. I can tell you that, as we see in Canada right now.
So besides supporting EFF, which is the Electronics Frontier Foundation, EFF.org, what else do we have in our power to really stop these people? See, because unless they know that we're up there and we're going to say, no, we're not going to take the game, then they're going to keep playing it.
You're right. Yeah, there's a lot of organizations that have been pushing for net neutrality. People have probably heard that word. They don't really understand what it is. But net neutrality means, no government intervention on the internet, on regulation, and he even goes to taxing internet commerce. But that's very important, this net neutrality. And the other thing is, there's groups, as you mentioned, EFF, which I've worked with those people in the past. A group I used to work for, EPIC, the Electronic Privacy Information Center. These are the folks that are out there trying to keep the internet, at least keep the government's hands off the internet. Another group that's more global is Privacy International, which has been fighting a lot of attempts around the world to control and regulate the internet. So these are groups that need your support. If anyone has any money left after the looting of our treasury and savings accounts and everything else, I anticipate there's talk that gasoline could go down to a dollar a gallon. I'll believe that when I see it, but somebody suggested that the next people in Washington looking for a bailout will be big oil.
But no, that's very purposeful. If you listen to Lindsay Williams, you'll have heard why it was happening, and the real reason I see is that it's to bankrupt Russia, Iran, Venezuela, Nigeria. You see, the game is what? You make money. Ooh, we got more money because the price of oil went up. Let's spend it. Let's do this and let's do that. And then all of a sudden, the price of oil comes down. And what happens? You're all bankrupt.
Right, absolutely. It's, it's an amazing thing to see how they can manipulate the markets. And what were we paying for, gasoline back in September, and then all of a sudden we saw it start to go down a little bit, and it's just like back during the oil shortage. You remember the red flags and the green flags in the 1970s? There were oil tankers sitting offshore waiting for the price to go up to deliver the oil, so there really wasn't a shortage. It was a contrived shortage.
There is a real glut because once the prices go up and people stop participating and nobody's going to buy it except for those who absolutely have to, then it gums up the whole work. So I'm sure they had to do this just to relieve all the excess, supply that they had.
Right, right, right. Well, Leo, thanks for calling the program, and we'll be keeping an eye on what these crooks are up to here in Washington, D.C., but thanks for calling in. This is Wayne Matson with the Wayne Matson Report, the Saturday Night Roundup. We will be back right after this short break. We're coming to you live tonight from Washington.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. This is Wayne Matson with the Wayne Matson Report, the Saturday Night Roundup, coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C., very snowy and cold and blustery Washington, D.C. Before we go to our next caller, I mentioned FDR, and but I also want to make mention of the fact that the factory in Chicago that's been taken over by laid-off workers is the Republic Windows and Doors Factory, and 200 employees are now sitting in. Taking over that factory. The Chicago police are just saying they're aware of the situation, but they're making no attempt to move in. I would say they dare or not. With the fact that the next president of the United States is from Chicago, I don't think they want to see some sort of violence against workers in Chicago. Good God, that city has enough of a history of that. But anyway, I want to play this clip from Franklin Roosevelt. Now, understand, FDR was from the moneyed class, but he went after them. He went after them to get this country out of the Depression. He knew full well that his old buddies on Wall Street had done this country in, and he went after these guys so bad that about a year later, the Wall Street boys tried to actually overthrow FDR in a military coup d'etat. And we would have never known about it had Smedley Butler, the great Marine Corps general, he came out and said, look, they contacted me, and he testified before Congress. But let's listen to what FDR said, and you're going to hear some very similar things. What were going on then is what's happening now.
3 months, my friend, since I have talked to the people of this country about our national problems. But during this period, many things have happened. And I am glad to say that the major part of them have greatly helped the well-being of the average citizen. In the short space of these few months, I am convinced that at least 4 million have been given employment. Or saying it another way, 40% of those seeking work have found it. That does not mean, my friends, that I am satisfied or that you are satisfied that our work is ended. We have a long way to go, but we are on the way. We come to the relief, for a moment, of those who are in danger of losing their farms or their homes. I have publicly asked that the foreclosure on farms and chattels and homes be delayed until every mortgagor in the country has had full opportunity to take advantage of federal credit. And I make the further request that if there is any family in the United States about to lose its home or its farm, that family should telegraph at once, either to the Farm Credit Administration or the Home Loan Corporation in Washington, requesting their help. I do not hesitate to say that although the prices of many products of the farm have gone up, and although many farm families are better off than they were last year, I am not satisfied. It is definitely a part of our policy to increase the rise and to extend it to those products that have as yet felt no benefit. If we cannot do this one way, we will do it another. But do it, we will. When we have restored the price level, we shall seek to establish and maintain a dollar which will not change its purchasing and debt-paying power during the succeeding generation. I said that in my message to the American delegation in London last July, and I say it now once more. Our dollar is now altogether too much influenced by the internal policies of other nations. Therefore, the United States must take firmly in its own hands the control of the gold value of our dollar. And as a further effective means to that end, I am going to establish a government market for gold in the United States. Therefore, under the clearly defined authority of existing law, I am authorizing the Reconstruction Finance Corporation to buy or sell gold at prices to be determined from time to time after consultation with the Secretary of the Treasury and the President. This is a policy and not a mere expedient. I have told you the story of our steady but sure work in building our common recovery. In my promises to you, both before and after March 4th, I made two things plain. First, that I pledged no miracles. And second, that I would do my best. I thank you for your faith. Our troubles will not be over tomorrow, but we are on our way.
Well, there you had it with FDR. Now, notice what he said about protecting a dollar. Now, there's rumor and talk in Washington that the Federal Reserve and all these other gangsters in the Treasury Department may actually devalue the U.S. dollar. That's basically like taking money right out of your savings account, right out of your wallet. And you heard what FDR said. He did not want that to happen, and he also was very much opposed to foreign nations influencing the value of the dollar. He was basically saying it was going to be backed by strong gold reserves. And also, he mentioned the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, that's the predecessor to Fannie Mae. That's back when, these guys weren't putting money in their own pockets like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac did, and then wanted the bailout. That's back when they actually guaranteed mortgages. And you heard what FDR said. He did not want any more foreclosures on homes or farms. We need to hear that from Barack Obama. He doesn't need to be listening to people like the people he's been listening to. Unfortunately, some of the retreads like Robert Rubin and Summers from the Clinton administration. He needs to go back and listen to what FDR did. And if his people don't want to do what FDR did, then he needs to find new people. That's about all I can say about it. Let's go to Joe, who's been holding on in Florida for quite a while here. Joe, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good show, Wayne.
Thank you.
I'm starting to come to the conclusion that the solution to this financial crisis is a debt jubilee. I've been researching the history of jubilees and the biblical and Christian long-term basically culture of having a jubilee. And according to the New Unger Bible Dictionary, I'd like to read the last line. It says,
sure.
Jubilees prevented one individual or groups of people from building up wealth through owning debts whereby one could control a nation. And I think that we're basically becoming debt slaves in this country. The jubilee was also every 49 years a way to repudiate slavery and to free all slaves. I think that that should be the method of attacking, because not only does it free up the people, it's a populist cause and it'll be popular, and at the same time it strikes the enemy in their vulnerablest place, which is control of the people through their debt.
I think it's a good idea.
It can be sold to evangelicals, any populist individuals. It really has broad appeal. And also, I think it would be successful in what it would bring about. This used to be a tradition amongst Christian nations, even amongst ancient Israel, and it's part of the reason why we never, usury was looked down upon and still is in the Muslim countries. And
right.
I think that it should be something that should be started to be promoted. A jubilee, a forgiveness of debt.
I think you're getting back to the part of the original founding principles of the United States was the idea of the commonwealth, the public commons, the commonwealth. We still have some commonwealths. Commonwealth of Virginia, where I'm doing the show from tonight. Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and the idea of the commonwealth was, the welfare of all was considered the prime goal of many of our founders. I failed to mention the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, where I believe this principle actually originally started from the people who came over here from England, who were certainly very religious in nature, but also promoted this idea of the commonwealth, the public good. And I think what you're suggesting with a jubilee or maybe a debt moratorium, I mean, if nations can ask for a moratorium on their debt, why can't individuals who are about ready to lose their homes, farms, or businesses do the same thing?
Well, I think, once again, if to get back to what I read about in that Unger Biblical Dictionary about how it allows people to control nations, I think the problem is that the people who are controlling a financial system have so much leverage that a democracy cannot tolerate it. And if we're going to maintain to be a democratic nation, which doesn't look very promising now, we're going to have to destroy this debt structure. And I think that's part of the reason that our ancestors were very wise in having jubilees, because it kept people from becoming overpowered by having intergenerations of wealth.
Yeah, I think you're onto something. I think we actually need to start thinking differently. I mean, looking at what we have right now with, they say, we build up all this tremendous debt and, we've got these hedge funds but hedge funds are always changing the name of something, because I believe hedge funds were really very similar to what they called junk bonds back in the 1980s. And we know what happened to that market, and we know what's happening to this market, this wanton speculation where people bet. They're betting on the stocks going up and stocks going down. They're playing both sides. This is a Ponzi scheme. This is the worst unregulated gambling system we've ever seen. And whose money are they playing with? They don't play with their own. They play with ours.
And the other thing I just want to comment on FDR, and he was doing good until it got to gold confiscation. I think that gold confiscation should only be done to people that owned in excess of maybe 1,000 ounces or even more. I think that the little guys should be able to buy gold and own gold. I think that hoarding gold, you know, FDR made it that if you had more than 5 ounces, you had to give it in. And I think that that's really targeting the middle class instead of the real gold hoarders like the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers who have millions of ounces.
Obviously, he used quite a broad brush when he did that, certainly. But how he started his administration, I think he really sent shockwaves through Wall Street, because he really did let them know under no uncertain terms who was in charge. And of course, that was one of the reasons they tried to toss him out a year later, after he implemented a lot of what you just heard mortgage moratoriums on the part of the mortgage lenders in this country. But anyway, Joe, thanks for calling in with that great idea, the Jubilee. Appreciate that. Let's go to Dave from Wisconsin, who's been holding on. Dave, are you with us?
Hello. Yes. Early on in your show tonight, you mentioned the British Royals and that they are laughable at this point by even some of the British people and everything. And I was doing some research work on a website, www.womensgroup.org, and it has an article on there titled "The Power of the British Commonwealth Over the World" that really goes into detail how the royals have retained not only the power they had while they were an empire, but have expanded upon it. And I found that article to be very, very compelling.
Well, I think you're right. And, it's one thing to have a ceremonial head of state, and that's what we're always told. The governors general of places like Canada, Australia, New Zealand, even places like Jamaica, Barbados, and other places where they still have these anachronisms. But what we've seen play out in Canada just this past week, and what we saw happen in Australia in 1975, that's far from being ceremonial. That's actually interfering in the democratic process by an unelected person, these governors general. We as Americans should be really cognizant of that fact, because sometimes I think we lose fact of what the American Revolution was all about. It was to cut our ties to the monarchy. Look, I would go so far. Of course, I'm not the president, but I would tell the Queen of England, look, she's welcome to visit the United States, but she's not welcome in the White House, because I think the founders of this country would be quite upset, especially people like Mr. Jefferson and Madison and General Washington. President Washington would be very upset to know that a British monarch had the nerve to step foot in the place that the British tried to burn down during the War of 1812.
Well, actually, they brought war against us twice already, and in my opinion, with this word game, going from the British Empire to the British Commonwealth is just a word game to literally, intellectually, and psychologically try to disarm us.
That's right. And what we see now happening in the Indian subcontinent, again, is another British contrivance, splitting Pakistan from India, and then India broke East Pakistan away from West Pakistan, created Bangladesh. It created just this obvious tinderbox for all this war, and now we see terrorist attacks. And again, this was all manufactured in London. The guy who came up with the idea was Lord Mountbatten, certainly somebody close to the present royal family. So the idea of these unelected potentates standing in a way of the popular will, I think we need to just press upon people that that's not really what we need in the 21st century. But
well, it's been pleasant talking to you. I won't occupy a lot of the time, but you mind if I plug my website?
Oh, please, go ahead.
ChristianLibertyPublishing.com. It has an article under the button, Red Global Terrorist Alert, regarding the British Royals that I find very compelling.
Oh, great. Okay, ChristianLiberty.org. Was that right?
ChristianLibertyPublishing.com. Just Google
Publishing. ChristianLibertyPublishing.com. I'll check it out myself. But thanks for calling in.
All right.
Dave,
thank you for receiving my call.
Okay, thank you. Anyway, it is quite interesting what we see playing out around the world with these governors general. The British try to say, well, you know, it's only there for show and pomp and circumstance. But, you know, we've seen it happen time and time again. I failed to mention what happened in Grenada in 1983 when the governor general there basically invited Ronald Reagan to invade the island to save some medical students. Of course, that was just a ruse to overthrow the government of Grenada. But we've seen these governors general do this thing time and time again. It's really time for that as an institution to go the way of the Ottoman Empire and the Austro-Hungarian Empire and the German Empire and the Russian Empire. It's just in the 21st century, it's kind of a foolish thing. But anyway, this is Wayne Mastin with the Wayne Mastin Report. We're going to take a short break, and after that break, we're going to come back with a little more news from the FDR administration.
Here at the Little White House in the Georgia woods, the liquor industry has just been placed under virtual control when the president signed the temporary liquor code brought down from Washington to him by Secretary of Agriculture H.A. Wallace. With this matter settled and with December 5th looming close at hand, liquor manufacturers and distillers are speeding production in a big way. And it's not bathtub gin they're turning out, is it, my friend?
Well, this is a very special day. Today, December 6th, is the 75th anniversary of the end of Prohibition. The 18th Amendment, of course, brought into the country prohibition of on alcohol, and Franklin Roosevelt, to his everlasting credit, forced through the 21st Amendment, which was actually implemented by President Roosevelt's signature on this very day in 1933. So this is the 75th anniversary of the end of Prohibition. We celebrated this this past week at the National Press Club because, again, to his everlasting credit, Franklin Roosevelt, the first license he signed for bringing back alcohol to the nation's capital was a license for the District of Columbia, license number one for, you guessed it, the National Press Club. He knew how to treat the journalists. George W. Bush could probably take a page from Franklin Roosevelt's book on how to treat the press, and certainly we hope President-elect Obama is paying attention as well. Another bit of trivia, the 36th state to ratify the 21st Amendment, and that was done just the day before on December 5th, 1933, was, you'll never guess, the state of Utah. So we have to thank those teetotaling Mormons out in Utah for being the 36th state, which was required, 36 states to ratify that 21st Amendment, because it was Utah that put us over the hurdles. So we have to not only thank Franklin Roosevelt, but we have to thank the good Mormon people of Utah for bringing an end to prohibition in this country. So cheers to everyone, and if you're going to have a drink tonight, remember to toast the 75th anniversary of the end of Prohibition. We certainly did that this past week in Washington, D.C. I have to say, though, there were some elements within the National Press Club, even today, did not want to pay a decent tribute to the end of the 18th Amendment, what brought about Prohibition. So some of those Carrie Nation types, unfortunately, are still with us. We just have to keep a very close eye on them, that they don't try to pull any fast ones. You know, it's often said that when a Democratic administration takes over in Washington, D.C., liquor sales go up and the beer sales go down. Conversely, when the Republicans are in charge, beer sales go up and the liquor sales go down. But I think we can all celebrate the fact that this is the 75th anniversary of the end of Prohibition. This is Wayne Mastin with the Wayne Mastin Report, coming to you tonight from Washington, D.C. We'll be with you this time next week. Thanks for joining us, and good night from a very snowy nation's capital.